If you want to know the secrets to great storytelling, stay tuned because this next guest knocks it out of the park. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzina, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I am doing good today. A little bit of storytelling today, Jake. How you doing?
That sounds good. I'm always making it happen. I need the help, so this is really good for us, okay? That's all I'm going to say about that. And we are honored to have with us today America's number one numero uno ghostwriter. He's the founder of Book Ambition that ghostwrites bestsellers for thought leaders around the globe. Okay, we're going worldwide today, folks. And he's a proprietor and teacher of the Ross Story Method. That's what I like. I like frameworks that break it down for me that I can do it time and time again. Okay. And these are utilized by Fortune 500 companies across the world. So without further ado, Dennis Ross, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's quite a pleasure to be speaking with you guys this morning.
Hey, the pleasure is all ours. Now, I want to get to know you a little bit here. And I'm just saying, is it the ghostwriter first or the businessman? Which came first? Can you tell us about that?
Wow, that's a very good question. And so before I knew anything about business, I was a writer as a child, and growing up in a home where a story was at a premium. And so I would say the ghostwriter, the storyteller, was first to be birthed before the businessman came about. I didn't even know there was a business in storytelling at that young age. So I'll put the ghostwriter first.
I think there's big business in it.
Yeah, there is.
Dennis, you've talked about writing as a sacred job, and you've also said it's a beautiful burden. It sounds like you're talking about Jake from my perspective. Jake is a beautiful burden. So man, can you elaborate a little bit on that statement?
When you have a skill able to articulate things only others at all times, you have to almost deploy that into your conversations with just average people who are seeking and scavenging for what they're trying to say. And you want to say, hey, this is it. So when I say it's a sacred, it's a beautiful burden. It's beautiful as a skill, as a God-given talent to be able to add words to wordless places, as we talk about. It's almost like walking around as a physician without a coat on. You must still tend to the needs, the medical needs of those around you, even when you're not in the hospital, because you're always walking around with that knowledge. So you can never not help people.
And we have a lot
if
of
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And we have a lot of investors on here who are listening, and they may be saying to themselves, well, why do I need story? I mean, story is not important, but I would push back to everybody by saying, if you're going out there, you're trying to persuade somebody, you're trying to create content, stories is the way you engage and you elicit emotion from people. How do you create a good story, Dennis, for the listeners out there?
Well, first, you create a great story by knowing what a story is. And so when I teach my storytelling class, one of the things we start with is we challenge our students to tell us what a story is. Now, people understand what their story is. They understand when they're in the presence of a great story via cinema, via a good book. But if you ask someone to tell you the purest definition of story, most people enter silence. Most people don't understand what story is. So to answer your question, you must first know what it is before you can then try to create it. So let's talk about that. Most people believe story is basically telling people what happened. That's actually journalism. Mm. Story is not what happened. Story is what happened because of what happened. And when you first start off with understanding it is the emotive consequence, the emotive conclusion of life's events, then you can actually start to build it, because you concentrate less on how, what, when, who, where, and you concentrate on what happened because you were in those places, because you witnessed those things. So you, from stage one, you enter into the emotive side of narrative construction. So first, you must know what it is. Second, you must, and we're getting into the raw story.
Know what is specifically, Dennis. You must know what is specifically.
You must, when you say that again, I didn't say that.
You said, first off, you must know what it is.
Yes.
What are we talking about? We must know what is.
You must know what story is.
You must know that you're basically telling people what happened because of what happened.
Exactly.
I gotcha. Take me a minute here. You got to bear with me. You know, I'm very much a rookie at this.
Like I said, Dennis, he's a beautiful burden. Like I just said it, he's beautiful, but sometimes he's a burden. It's okay.
No, I love it. And so, yes, you must know what it is. And so it sounds pedestrian. It sounds elementary, but most people simply don't understand what story is. So, you know, before you start to construct it, once you understand it is what happened because of what happened, then you concentrate on different elements than you would before. You concentrate less on the facts of the situation, and you concentrate more on how the facts affected those around you, are affecting those around you. So you immediately move towards the emotive connection versus just the data. When you're dealing with, you know, I teach storytelling in Silicon Valley. I have many clients who are working on cap raises for startups. So I understand individuals who are essentially swimming in a world of data and functionality of their product or service they want to take to the world. And so they bring me in to sort of place some distance between all of the facts and the data and to create the story.
And those people are already half robots anyway. So you really got to break that down for them. That's a challenge, I'm sure.
Right. It's very interesting. Yeah, it is a robotic. The tech industry can be a very robotic place. However, if you think about those who have been most successful in that particular field, like Steve Jobs, what did he do? Steve Jobs didn't promote, hey, we have the best screen. We have the best camera. No, he understood the story. He understood that he had to take a phone and make it a cup of soup. Why do I say that? Because now when we get sick, we don't crawl into bed with a cup of a bowl of chicken noodle soup. We want our iPhone. He actually placed emotions into an inanimate object. He took technology and created emotions. Now back to, let's talk about that just for a moment, because you're talking about stories and raising money and what's the first step. You must know what story is. There's a great video on YouTube, Don Valentine, who was of course the late founder of Sequoia Capital in Silicon Valley, essentially the head private equity guy on the planet. And so before his death, of course, he was the first gentleman to invest in Apple. He tells a story as he's speaking to the Stanford Business School, and they ask him, how did you know how to invest in Steve? How did you hit these companies out of the park over and over for 50 years? And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, story is how the money flows. He said, Steve walked into his office with wet hair, he needed a shower, he smelled. And he said, but I sensed a story in this company named after fruit. And so he goes down a pathway of when he's presented with thousands and thousands of pitches on a year-to-year basis, he only concentrates on how well do the founders understand and know how to tell story, because that is how the investor creates sight into their exit, because the general masses, the public, is not going to be into the competency of your microchips. They're going to be into the story of the product. And he said, the story is how he makes his investment decisions. And so if you're talking about raising money, if you're talking about those who have historically, become legends in the field, they all did this based on narrative, not on facts, not on data. It is based on the story that's able to connect your heart to the heart of the consumer.
In your website, I pulled out some of the secrets. Let's go over them real quick. Let me enumerate them and let the listeners write these down, because these are really important. Number one, you said, believe in the idea. The second one was be passionate. And I can tell that you're already passionate about storytelling. The third one is share the backstory. And the fourth one is connect with the audience. I think all four of those encapsulate Steve Jobs and what the founder of Sequoia was looking for. Can we really discuss those secrets and really let's help people as they're thinking about the story, what happened because of what happened, how do I start building my story and start, if it's raising capital or if it's, I want to go out to dinner tonight with my wife at my restaurant, or if I want my kids to, clean their room, how do I create that story and that narrative to be able to persuade that person to do that?
Right. Very good. And so when you're dealing with whether you're an enterprise or whether you're an individual, you first have to understand there is no marketplace. There's only a human place. These are just people who have families, people who have children, people who have hopes and desires just like you. And so what happens is when you're trying to raise money for a real estate project, when you're trying to raise money for a startup, you have to first understand If you do not connect emotively with what means the most to them, you have lost before you start. So you must connect emotively. Understanding allows for a person listening to your pitch to essentially be able to resonate with your heart, because what they feel inside of them that they didn't tell you, obviously you feel inside of yourself. The reason why we cry, the reason why we laugh, the reason why we get upset when we can call it emotions is we're understood so infrequently in life that once we are understood by someone, so it's not that emotions are just crying and laughter and tears. It is that understanding is the prerequisite for all of that happening. So when you're putting together your pitch, are you seeking for others to understand that you understand them? Now, listen to that. Are you seeking for people to understand you and what you're trying to pitch? Or are you presenting that you understand them? You understand their needs. You understand their frustrations. You understand that their tension field, and your product, your service, your company is bringing simply that we understand to the table. Now, in this short amount of time, obviously there's, you know, we spend days doing the construction of story. So without going into the granular details, that is one of the first components, making sure that whoever you're speaking to, that you present, that you create a presentation that lets them know you understand where they're coming from and where they're trying to go. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And it's one of Stephen Covey's 7 habits. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that is a challenge for the mass majority of Americans. I'm a life coach, so I understand that. I love to ask empowering questions. I love to get to know who I'm speaking about. I give them my time. I give them my presence. And that's one of the best things that you can give to somebody. But you can truly understand them. I think you can connect with that person. So I think that's awesome. I think that's amazing advice. Thank you.
It is critical. And it is selfless. Storytelling is a selfless act. Storytelling is like CPR. It is designed to save others, not yourself. So when you learn storytelling, it is to be deployed to pull others out from a dark place. It is totally selfless. And anytime someone tells a story and all they're doing is talking about themselves, they have not learned storytelling. Storytelling is absolutely selfless.
Wow, I was going to ask you a question that you may agree or disagree with me, but I think you just cleared something up for me. In Hollywood, the movies that they're making today, in my opinion, suck, as opposed to years ago where the storytelling was much better. Is it because they have agendas now and they're telling stories that they want instead of telling stories that people want to hear? I mean, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. To me, I can't find a really good movie to watch anymore. I'm watching TV shows from 15 years ago.
He wants romantic comedy, and I'm going to break it down for him right now. Basically, I've actually heard this discussed a little bit. I'm going to let the gentleman here jump in a second. Part of it is the funding that these lower budget movies that used to be like the romantic comedies and some of these just general comedies were making. It's harder now because they're not getting the back end DVD sales. And ultimately, without those back end DVD sales, they got to push it into Marvel this, Marvel that, superhero this, superhero that, because it's a financial thing that's preventing a lot of this. Yes. Stuff that was in the middle that a lot of people enjoyed and could connect with because it had a good story to it. They're being basically blocked out for, you know, financial reasons because they're not able to capture on the back end with the DVD sales.
That's a very, very good point. And I think to the earlier point, and I really hadn't thought about it until you just said that, because I tend to like older movies myself, and I hadn't really made the connection between that. But you are correct. There is we call it just basic, you know, narcissistic. When stories are told or movies are made and there's an agenda that is pushed forward versus just telling human stories, yes, they are less enjoyable. You are very, very, very accurate on that.
Can I get some Goodwill Hunting or what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. When was that? Robin Williams? Oh, man. It wasn't he great? Oh, my
dude,
goodness.
I love Goodwill Hunting, man. I'm dating myself.
What is it? Goodwill Hunting. You don't get me on calling movies now. But yes, that particular style of narrative, that particular style of screenplay was selfless. In other words, the characters were there to help you understand yourself. In fact, I tell clients all the time when I sit down to write their books, if someone reads the last page of your book and they understand your life, you have failed. The purpose of great storytelling is that I close the last page of your book and understand my life. And to that point, Stories are erected to be mirrors, not to be binoculars, so someone far off who was not living with you and growing up with you can bring your far away life closer, but instead a mirror where reading your life, I actually see mine in clearer form. And so I think that's what you're talking about when you're dealing with movies. We were able to watch movies 20, 30 years ago that highlighted us and gave us greater clarity on things we were going through versus maybe movies today are all about, what the director, what the writer wants to tell you about themselves. That's a very, very good point.
So basically, before I ask my next question, what you're telling me is Hollywood is screwed unless they go back to their going of like bringing out the shows like Monk and The Mentalist and all these shows that actually had amazing characters and character development and had depth and had people going from loser to hero, back to loser, back to being redeemed. We love those stories where we can connect. So what you're telling me is Hollywood, you better wake up and you better smell the coffee and see what's going on and get on the phone with Dennis and ask Dennis, how the hell do I redeem myself and write a good damn story? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I love it. I love it. And yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this has to do with just a new generation, social media effects. I think that, you know, when the world is let's see, how can we say this in benevolent form? When the world is addicted to selfies, it is no mystery that everything is about the self. So it's not that big of a logical leap to understand the difference in media when, you know, all day long, all people do is take pictures of their own face.
But if a good story is counting on the back end person, that good story is going to fulfill the narcissistic needs of the user. So that actually would probably work to their benefit if I'm hearing you correctly.
So, exactly. And so it's not that narcissism leaves. It is that it's just not your narcissism. Yeah. So it's not that
you're getting the director's narcissism versus the end user. And that might actually sell better if you can play to that story. So
exactly. Because as an end user, I want to understand me. And so, yes. Basically, you know, great movies take a picture of you, not the director, not the writer. And so it's still that selfie, I guess, or you-we, I guess we'll call it. <you-we>.
Wow. So, Dennis, can you have any tips on how to engage the audience? I mean, this is more like presentation, but I mean, as far as storytelling, or if you're up there speaking to a person raising capital or whatever, is there any tips or anything on how I can be better to engage the audience?
Yes. You know, I'll give you one particular client was speaking at a pitch competition in Silicon Valley recently. And obviously I won't call her name, but I'll just give you some of the, how do we tell our story in this new world? You know, post pandemic, the world has changed. The tectonic plates of society have moved never to return to their original footprint. People's idea of what matters is much different. We're in the age of meaningful work. That affects fundraising, that affects presentations. And so she said, how do we talk about all of the awards and everything in the past that really don't mean a lot today? And so the strategy we used was strategy we call regret. It's literally a storytelling strategy. And so we had her stand up and say, if this were 2019, we would talk about the 40 awards we won that year because of the functionality of our product. If this was 2019, we would deal with the reviews we've received from the top industry magazines in this business. If this were 2019, we would talk about this $700 billion industry we're about to enter and the advantage we have as a small player, but it is not. The world has changed. We are now entering an age of meaningful work where profit is no longer the only goal. It is just one of the goals. Sometimes when you're dealing with telling a story, you have to look at it multidimensionally. You have to look at it by saying, you know, I want to talk about this and I want to talk about that, but what's most important is that. The problem is most amateurs don't understand that you need to say exactly what you just said versus trying to figure out how to say it. Does that make sense? And so we actually had her speech designed to get the attention by a throwback, by nostalgic, because right now, 2019 might as well have been 1950. It was such a different time. And so we went back by way of nostalgia and regret. She was saying, you know, if this were that time, I would say this. I would say, so she went down 10 things in 60 seconds, got it all said. They know everything she did, the successes she had. And now she was able to talk about, but now we have a greater purpose for our product and service. Now we understand the world is seeking more than you know, what they sought before. So one way you can actually get the attention or keep the attention or to engage is to use conversation that you usually would use with a friend or even with a strategic advisor who's helping you design it, and understand that that raw information of how do I say this actually is a great part of your speech itself. And many times the best speech is the one that was on your draft before you actually refined it before you spoke. So many times you have to recognize that speaking in raw draft form can many times be the best speech you ever gave. We can refine our way out of effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Before we go to the personal growth questions, last question for me, the components of a story. I've got some written down from somebody else who's storytelling as well. Identifiable characters, authentic emotion, significant moments, and specific details. Do you have any components that you work on when you write your story that you say, I need to have them in my story?
Yeah, and so in my Ross, my story method, we establish belief. That is, who taught you to believe what you believe? What is their name? After we leave step, and I'll go through this, number two is trigger event. That is, what happened in your life? We're talking about the Ross story method, the Ross story path. What happened in your life to change the trajectory of your life such that you were headed in a different direction than you ever imagined you would? Step number three is conflict of belief. And it is in step number three where some magical things happen, because conflict of belief means you've had exposure beyond what those in step one expected you to have, and now you're trying to reconcile what they taught you with what you're experiencing. And this is the stage when you learn to separate good people from bad information. Step number three, conflict of belief, causes a person to reconcile, how do I make sense of this? Step number four is adaptation. That is, now that I'm living in a different world, now that my life has gone in a different direction than I was told it was going to, now that I'm faced with things I must believe I was told to never believe, how do I adapt intellectually to a new reality? How do I adapt? An example would be, for 30, 40 years, you and I rode around on the highway at 70 miles an hour with no seatbelt on because there was no seatbelt law, okay? Once it became law, we had to adapt, which takes us to step number five, which is adjustment. Now that we accepted and adapted that there was a seatbelt law, we had to now adjust our seatbelt so we could live comfortably with this new law. So now we have a seatbelt, we're moving it around. We have adapted. Now we're adjusting to live with it. Step number six is transformation. We become a different person than we were in step one because we had different experiences. We had a trigger event. We had conflict of belief out of conflict of exposure. We caused ourselves to adapt because reality changed. We have now adjusted, and now we have transformed into a different person. And finally, step number seven, that transformation creates an inspirational story, an inspirational person, because those now coming behind me can read my life. And so when you talk about writing a story, whether this is a manuscript, and I go from belief system to trigger event to conflict of belief, adaptation, adjustment, transformation, and inspiration, guess what? This also applies to my corporate clients who are trying to tell their corporate story. They talk about the same thing. And what trigger event caused your business to go to a different direction? What did you learn later that you found out, you know, wasn't true? How did you adapt to the market? How did you adjust? How did you transform? And you become an inspiration. Of course, to execute this properly after you've gone through these steps, it has to do with the mastery of language. It has to do with being able to articulate properly in efficient terms what we call the economy of expression, learning to say more in less time. You have to understand that once you go through this process, you then must have the language to express it properly so your inspiration can be scalable. And so those are some of the things that I would, within this short conversation, things that I use with corporations and with individuals. And you would be surprised. I've had to sit down and take 20, 30 years of information, subject it to this pathway. And it essentially is a funnel that by the time we get to step seven, we have a powerful, lucid, truncated message that heretofore took a long time to tell, but we're able to tell it in short prose.
That was awesome.
More
Rewind
to come,
that, everybody.
More
From
to come.
Belief to inspirational person. That was freaking awesome. Love that.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
get involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we're back. So I'm following the method. In 2008 to 2011, I was in the pharmaceutical industry. And ultimately, there was a lot of regulations coming down. The industry was changing and culture got a lot worse. I was having to accept this new reality. I had this conflict of belief that I was supposed to get a job, get a 401k, and work for a company for the next 20, 30 years and retire happy and live the American dream of middle class. All of a sudden, there was no promotions. The pay was getting worse. I was starting to become unhappy in my life, unfulfilled. I wasn't living with purpose. And all my prior beliefs of get a job, take a 401k, and work for a company forever were being challenged. I had to look around and say, there has to be another way. There's got to be a better way than this. And I met Gino, someone who's aspiring to be a real estate entrepreneur. I desired freedom and fulfillment in my life. All of a sudden, we said, hey, let's go try to buy a building together and see what happens. And we started to adjust and go it alone. And then all of a sudden, we got a second property and we're seeing, wow, this can actually work. And then I'm saying, I don't need this corporate over my head anymore. I don't need this corporate handholding. I can do this on my own. And I started to go through a transformation. Then all of a sudden, we started getting good at it and started making a lot of money and teaching others. And it really became an inspirational story of success. That's my journey. And I tried to apply your method to it.
I really do. And you did a great job, and you were able to, in truncated form, you know, talk about decades of experiences. And that's the power of the Ross method. It allows a person to, you know, basically put everything you've done under a microscope and to come out with, you know, the one thing we all want from our stories being told, which is to inspire others. Inspiration is so powerful. To perspire, as we say in our classes, to sweat on the outside, but to inspire is to sweat on the inside. And it's so powerful because it's the sweat that never dries. It causes a person, it's greater than motivation. Yes, yes, you can do it. You can do it. But no one, you know, you leave those conferences saying, but how do I do it? Inspiration connects to us emotively in a different place because it causes us to do what we would have never done before without the fanfare and the rah-rah, just a silent resolve to make our lives or our situations better. And so inspiration is what we all seek as storytellers, and the pathway, the method is designed to reach that place of inspiration for your reader.
And I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you how I did it, and hopefully that we can find an intersection there that connects with you.
Yes. And I love what you just said. I love what you just said. Are you a storyteller? I love what you just said.
I'm a student, okay, of the Ross method.
Thank you. I love it. And so, but it's wonderful because, again, storytelling is selfless. And by you telling your story in an honest, authentic way, without necessarily trying to promote yourself or trying to, you know, elevate yourself at a certain place, to just talk about your travails, your successes, your failures and whatnot, and how you came out on the other side, you create a mirror. Because as you said, you're not telling me to become what you have become, but you allow me to have the encouragement to do what I've been trying to do through your life. I've been inspired to not give up on my dream, which is that's the golden egg of storytelling, that through story, through saying, even as children, the little train that went up the hill saying, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, that somewhere we said, I think I can. And that is the power of story. It infuses into us what we could not infuse into ourselves.
What are best practices for finding that connection, the understanding in others, or that intersection, as I just referred to? Can you help us find that place? Because it almost reminds me of very good comedy and the stuff that Seinfeld did back in the day, where he would find those little weird things in life and then connect it and then bring it to light. And then people had a shared connection there. Can you help us find those intersections in our storytelling?
Yeah. So honesty is the fuel of storytelling. And so from a best practices standpoint, one of the One of the objectives I always have is to establish quickly a level of honesty, a level of and we call it naked emotions. When I sit down with a client, how do we get to the place where we're not wasting weeks and weeks talking around issues and get right to the core? And so I ask a question at the beginning of every session I have for the past 25 years. And it is this: no matter whether they are head of a tech company, whether they are phenomenally wealthy, whether they're a small business owner, whether they are just starting out in the journey, the same question applies to everyone and has the same effect. And it is this: I say, you know, imagine today is not our first day, but imagine this is our last day. It's been a pleasure working with you. And I think we have a phenomenal story, a phenomenal manuscript the world is going to benefit greatly from. I said, I just have one other thing to write. I said, I need to write the acknowledgments page in your book. And I said, as we end our session today, what do you want me to say to your father? And what I have learned is, if there is one thing that opens up the spirit of a man, of a woman, their heart and their mind, it is not asking what they feel about their mother. It is asking whether they knew their father, whether they never met him, whether they love him, whether they hate him. That one question is the most powerful question I have learned in almost 30 years of doing that, to start the process of honesty towards a place of ultimate honesty and get us on the right track for storytelling. I have been speaking with, I'll give you one example. I was speaking to a professor.
You're going to tell us why, right?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons, you know, I don't fully know if we as humans, as mortal humans, fully know why, but there is connections, and this may take more psychologists, psychiatry to deal with this in greater detail, but from my experiences of interviewing over 10,000 hours of interview, I have learned that the relationship we have with our fathers, whether there was none or whether it was good or bad, exists in a deep place that our relationship with even our mothers does not exist. And I remember one example. She was of Indian descent. She was very conservative. She was an academic, you know, and she had written this draft, and I was working on her book about something about the marketplace. She had some new ideas and whatnot. And I said this question to her at the beginning, and she said, "Dennis, that has nothing to do with my book. I just want to talk about my research." And I was like, "Doctor, I need to." And she said, she said, when she was 4 years old, her father used to wake her up back in India and in the morning and said, "One day, young lady, you're going to get to America. I have to read these books to you." So he read her, you know, The Wealth of Nations and Moby Dick. And he, you know, he read all the classic literature. He said, "One day you're going to need to know this. You're going to get to America one day and be educated." And she said that went through her whole elementary years. And she finally got to America. And she said her father, who spent his whole life trying to prepare her to become, you know, this educated woman, she said, "Dennis, I got to into the end of my PhD program." And she said her father, who was in her 80s by that time, she said she sent for him. She said, "I'm graduating. I'll have my doctorate in 30 days. And he was scheduled to come over there. And a month before she graduated, he dropped dead. So she said, "You can't ask that question." But of course I did. And once I learned how she felt about her father and how all that she is doing and has done is really in honor of him, that gave me angle of expression to express the other areas of her life, even if I never talked about her father in the book. The best practices of asking that question is it positions me properly to express other things, even if I never talk about that. Because I always say in my class, okay, I'm getting excited. Let me come on. Say in my class that if you don't learn how, what makes a Marine sniper a Marine sniper is not that he knows from where to shoot. Is he knows the angle of the shot has to be right. And so when you're writing, when you're shooting your literary shot, I have to establish from best practices, I have to go to the baseline of where our spirit and our soul lives. That one question places us on a path, even if we never talk, to write the story from the proper place. people, many people who are great storytellers, you know, and don't angle themselves correctly. They don't understand that, you know, if you tell me things as we're writing your story, 90% of what you tell me, I probably will never say or write. But the spirit of what you have told me in honesty will jump in the mundane things I write about because the cave knows the cave. What do I mean by that? Let's say you and I are getting on an elevator. You're in before I do, and a door opens and you're standing in the back. And let's say for 20 years you were on drugs, and by the grace of God, you kicked it and came out. Let's say for 20 years I was on drugs, and by the grace of God, I kicked it and I came out. We're just getting on the elevator. I walk in, I see you, I say good morning. You say good morning. I turn around and I look at the buttons and I say, wow, he's been there. How do I know you've been there? Because the cave knows the cave. The language of the cave knows the language of the cave because it jumps into the mundane things of your life. And so in good morning, I hear your addiction. However, if I had never lived that life, I just heard good morning. And so when you establish you're going to live your life in an honest way, you don't have to say what you actually went through because it jumps in hello. It jumps in how are you? It jumps in have a good day. The same way with storytelling, when you're dealing with a book, a manuscript, or telling a story, when you're honest with me to tell me the addictions, the dysfunctions, the molestation, the convictions, the mistakes, the lie, when you tell me everything you've been through, it's not so that I can tell everyone what you've been through. It's so that I can say good morning and people can feel it. That's storytelling.
Man. Gino, you had your finger up. I'm not going to jump you here, but.
Well, I was just going to follow up with the father thing. I have a little bit of experience in this. I've got 5 daughters and a son. And the reason why, one of the reasons why I think our society is a little bit on a downslide is there's not enough fathers out there. They're not being role models to their kids. And the reason why, I'll take a bullet for any one of my kids. And my kids know that.
I'm right there with you. My boy.
I've got a ton of my kids have a ton of self-esteem. They know how a man is supposed to treat a woman. I hope that they marry someone like myself. And this may not be politically correct or not, but that's the problem. They need a father. They need a role model. My 8-year-old knows that I walk around with no shirt on. That's my man suit. I'm protecting her. She knows that I'm there for her for whatever. I will work 24 hours a day for them.
Yes.
And that gives them comfort and solace to know that I've got somebody when I'm 80 years old and they're 40, they always have somebody to come back to and they can always rely upon me as my parents allowed that to happen to me. And that's where the confidence in my life. And that's why I've been able to thrive. And if you rip that apart and you start demeaning men and calling us weak and all, this is what you get. You get crap. Sorry. That's all I have to say. Go ahead, Jake.
No question, he said.
And if one day, God forbid, you're no longer on this planet, let's say 70 years from now, who looks at you as a legend, who looks at you as her protector, as her example, and someone asks the question, what do you want me to say to your dad? You can see how that will place that book, that project, on a place as deep goes.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Your Indian doctor friend's father was reading Wealth of Nations to a 4-year-old, Adam Smith.
Yeah. She named all these things. She went Huckleberry Finn. She went Charles Dickens, Moby Dick. She went Wealth of Nations. Now he all throughout her whole, first, second, third grade years, he read all these books. So he may not have started off with Wealth of Nations at 4. But when she was in first, second, third grade, he was reading these and she said they would lay on the floor there and he would say, one day you're going to need to know these things. And it really, it really set the book on a different pathway because it gave me the proper perspective to express the other things that she wanted to talk about, because now I know what happened because of what happened.
I'm going to tell you right now, I read Wealth of Nations. The vocabulary was different back then. That was a challenging. I got the division of labor, and that's all I pulled out of that. It's so good for both of them, all right? Because that was not easy. I think the real story and the real podcast here is us talking about fatherhood next time, because wow, the two of you both lit a fire under your ass when this came up. So I'd love to pick your brain in the future about that, because the passion and the energy, you both lit up like bleeping light bulbs. Holy shit. So I just want to say that was amazing to hear that.
I'm all in. I would love to do that program. I'm going to hold you to your suggestion because I want to do that. I want to have a conversation about fatherhood.
Listen,
as a father.
Bring it. So I want to find out the best way for folks to get a hold of you, the central hub, the website, all that good stuff before Gino wraps us up here.
Yes. And thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed this time immensely. My website is bookambition.com, BOOKAMBITION.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, where I spend most of my social media time, just under my name, Dennis Ross. You'll see me. I'm the black guy with the beard. And you can find me. I even give my email, which is info@bookambition.com. Don't spend too much time on IG, but if you want to reach me, you can really find me on LinkedIn or on my website. And I'll be happy to speak to you about your storytelling needs and to give even more details on how you can tell a better story for yourself or for your company.
G Daddy.
Jake, you have a young Dennis Ross hanging out in school, loves to write. And he says, one day I'm going to become a writer, but he has no idea that you can actually make a business out of this. He's been doing this for the last 30 plus years. And the Ross method, I like that. I like the Dennis Ross method. You can hear his voice. One day, Jake and I, we've got to get on. We got to sing a little opera together because I can tell by his voice. He's got a nice deep baritone voice. I want to share that. But a couple things on the show. You know, what happened because of what happened? It's amazing. Journalism is supposed to tell us what happened. That doesn't happen anymore. Journalism is completely different. I would challenge anyone who wants to write a story, wants to get into Hollywood, to that really go back and listen to this podcast, because it's all about creating the story, about connecting emotively with others, about understanding others. Seek first to understand, yes, then to be understood. You know, less on facts, more on how the facts affect us. I love that. And that motivation versus inspiration. We all like to be motivated, but to be inspired, to sweat within inside of us and to carry that through our lives and not to be in the story about us, but trying to connect with the character who's watching the story. That's what really promotes an amazing story. So I would challenge anybody who wants to become a better storyteller, who wants to learn more about themselves, because this sounds like a little bit of personal coaching here as well, a little bit of life coaching going on. You can get coached and write a story at the same time with Book Ambition. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate the time with you today.
Thank you so much. And you keep being a great father.
Ah, this is a feel good show today, guys. Thank you so much. And as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's Dennis. He's the G Daddy. And we all make it happen. See you next time.
Thanks, guys.